Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin Underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Series 7, Episode 7 of Out with Susie Ruffle. Hello. I hope that whenever you're listening to this, you are having a good week. I first of all need to thank so many of you that got in touch after Kadif's episode last week. It seemed that it really resonated with so many of you, so I am delighted about that. Also, so many of you have been to my tour shows. It has been wonderful to meet people after the show, and it has been very special. The kind words that you have said about this podcast really does mean the world to me. So thank you so, so much. I also, for the first time in ages, had a look. I had to find the podcast to find out what number we were at. Classic me. And I went on the Apple podcast page on my computer. And there's lots of lovely ratings and reviews. I really appreciate that. And it really helps people find the show. So if you're enjoying it and you've got 5 minutes, if you could leave a little review, a little 5 stars, that would be brilliant, because the more people that listen to it means the more advertising we can get and the more episodes I can make, the more studios I can book. So if you do love it, I would really, really appreciate that. I've got a brilliant episode for you today. Natasha Devon, she is a writer, she is a journalist, she is a public speaker, she has a show on LBC. We had a really interesting conversation about sexuality, about bisexuality, about being part of the LGBTQIA community. I do need to put out a brief mention though. We do talk about eating disorders. We talk about anxiety. We talk about sort of crippling anxiety at one point. So if that's something that you feel like you're not in a place to listen to today, maybe this isn't the episode for you. Maybe have a little break. But if you are ready, then I think you're going to really enjoy it. Natasha's story is actually something that a lot of people have asked for more content of people like her. So I'm really pleased that I get to share this episode with you. Okay, but before that, as always, we have some listener emails. This is a short and sweet one, but I just wanted to share it. Hello, I wanted to say I'm a big fan of the podcast. I listened to it all the way through, discovering my identity to coming out to my parents. And I'm eternally grateful for the chats you've had with your guests. They are a beacon of light amongst the vitriol in the world these days. I was wondering if you could get Mark Gatiss on the podcast. That is a great idea. I'm going to reach out to him today. I'm a big fan of his work all the way from League of Gentlemen. I've found interviews discussing the top of the experience as a gay man extremely moving and relatable. Many, many thanks. And that's from Annabelle. You're absolutely right. Here's a great suggestion. I'm going to reach out and let's see if we can get him on the show. Often people really want to do the show, but they don't have the time, or they're really busy, or they're back to back with work and they haven't got the sort of space to be able to do it. But I'll reach out and I'll see what we can do. But thank you for the kind words that you said about the podcast. And I'm pleased that I was, well, not me, but this show was there all the way through that journey for you. Okay, let's have another one. Hi there, Susie. Thank you so much for your brilliant podcast. I discovered it in the summer of 2022 and then proceeded to listen to the entire back catalogue. As many of your listeners have done, your podcast found me at a time when I really needed it. And I am so grateful to you, the guests, and all the listeners for sharing their stories. I also came to see your show in Bridport with some friends. Yes, the gig where someone kept chatting in the audience. How rude. That was rude. But I felt too shy to say hi at the end. This is a very delayed email of gratitude, as each week I listen and think about emailing in and then can't find the right words to explain my story. So I think this may be long and rambly. Sorry in advance. My dating history is brief. I was educated entirely under Section 28, so didn't ever consider the idea of being bi or pansexual until recently. I was attracted to men as a teenager and never thought to question my sexuality any further. I had some excellent, intense female friendships throughout my life, but I've always dated men. I was in a straight relationship for most of my 20s. And soon after that breakup, I started dating my current boyfriend. We are now approaching the 10-year mark. I always assumed I was an active ally to the LGBTQIA plus community, but at 37, something shifted in me. And suddenly I felt really uncomfortable with my straight identity. It didn't feel right, and there was a combination of events which led me to feel really stressed out and guilty about hiding my bisexuality from my partner, my friends, and from myself. I would describe it as holding all the puzzle pieces in my hands for years, but refusing to look at them clearly. It somehow didn't feel real to me to just know, and I felt so much sadness about this. I read a book lent to me by a queer friend who, unprompted, said they thought I should read it. The book is all about a woman my age suddenly meeting someone and realising she was bisexual. She leaves her husband to start a new life with her girlfriend as she chooses to live her authenticity in the space of many obstacles. The book honestly terrified me as I felt like I was being outed somehow. I also read it whilst I had COVID and isolating in a room in my house. Note to self, do not isolate and then rethink all of your life choices. I'm super lucky to be working as a lecturer at a university, doing my dream job, spending my days with inspired young people studying an art subject. Several of my students have come out to me in tutorials, for which I feel incredibly grateful for. They use me to test out how they're going to share this with friends and family. The journey of one of my students really resonated with me. I was thrilled to see them come out to friends and start loving and living their life. During these conversations, I wanted to say, everything you're thinking is how I feel too. But it was too new for me and not helpful to the student at the time. I realised I was feeling jealous of my students being in their early 20s and being able to explore their sexuality in a time when, for the most part, conversations can be open and inclusive of all sexualities. I hope I'm able to tell my students once they graduate just how important those conversations were for me. I decided to talk to my boyfriend, who was really generous and open with me. There were a stressful few months while we discussed what it might mean for our relationship, whether we were breaking up. And for us both, there was a concern that I was somehow biding my time in this relationship until I had the opportunity to leave and explore my bisexuality. It's been tough, but so important for our relationship, which feels stronger as a result. I can be myself entirely with him, and for now, that's all I want. Jess Foscue's episode completely resonated with me, and I think I've listened to it about 4 times and cried throughout. I've shared with my closest friends, which feel great, and they were supportive and allowed me to talk through my feelings at length. I feel seen and supported, but I still undermine myself when questioning whether I can really be bi with zero actual experience of queer relationships. I was really scared that by telling people, they would question this too. But so far, that's just my brain when I'm feeling less confident. One of my friends lovingly said that I was a baby queer, which is a term I'm enjoying and embracing. Sophie Hagen's episode made me feel really seen and heard, and I thank you for bringing these stories to us. Okay, that's it for now. I'm happy if you read out this story on the podcast, but please don't use my name. Maybe say baby queer. The 6th member of the Spice Girls? Okay, bye. Bye, 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 bye. Thank you so much for that email. And I think that fits really into the conversation that I have today with Natasha. I'm so pleased that the podcast has helped you along the way. It's so interesting. Jess's podcast, my dear, dear friend Jess, who I love, that comes up again and again and again in conversations. It seems that it's resonated with so many people and been so helpful for so many people. So thank you, Jess, if she's listening, for being so beautiful and open on that episode. And thank you for sharing your story with me. And good luck on your journey. Okay. Let's get to today's conversation with Natasha. I loved this episode. Oh, before we do, I need to say, I would love more emails. I'm getting emails in every week, but I would love to have more. We used to get loads and loads and loads, and we're still getting the same listenership, but fewer emails. So if you've been thinking for ages, I really want to send in my story, but I haven't found time to, or, oh God, I don't know that I'm that good at writing. I worry about sending it in. Don't worry. Oh, or if you make spelling mistakes, don't worry. I make loads of spelling mistakes. I can just read it. It's fine. The email is hello@susieruffle.com. Get in touch with me, share your story, and you can always be anonymous if you would prefer to, like baby queer. Okay, let's get to that conversation with Natasha. I hope that you enjoy this as much as I did. Oh, listener, I am very excited to share today's conversation with you. I'm about to have a chat with Natasha Devon, MBE, who is a writer, presenter and activist. Now, you might know her from her weekly LBC show, where she's smart, caring, honest, intelligent, having conversations about some of the biggest issues that face us in today's society. She also writes for a number of publications, including The Guardian and Grazia, and books. She's written Mind Manual, A Beginner's Guide to Mental Health, Yes, You Can Ace School Without Losing Your Mind, and her debut novel Toxic was published in July. She is also founder of the Mental Health Media Charter, which scrutinises the way media reports on mental health. I mean, I think we can all agree, very important indeed. She also tours schools and universities and events across the world, delivering talks on mental health, body image, gender and equality. And I'm delighted that she's taken an hour out of her day to chat to me today. Hello, Natasha.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right. I never know how to feel when people mention the MBE thing. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Like, right, okay.
When I got it in 2015, I think I rightly judged that it would open doors for me. But mm-hmm, now it's sure. It's 2022 and I'm like, there's British Empire after my name, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've got friends that have MBEs that I think have similar relationships. But also it's the type of thing where you're like, you want to tell your mum that you've got an MBE. Like, it's hard to say, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to say no to something that feels so steeped in history. Some of the history is dreadful, yes. But it's also a way that people sort of recognise brilliant work that people have done.
I had a thing in a school the other day where this sixth form boy came up to me after I'd done a presentation and he went, about the MBE thing. And I just launched into this massive explanation of why I took it and, you know, how few women get one and how, you know, it did open doors for me and it got me into the right rooms. And I'm part of a campaign to try and change the name to British Excellence as well. And then I finished the spiel and he goes to me, I just wondered what you got it for. And I was like, oh.
It's sweet that he cared.
Yes.
And I think I read a thing about people trying to change it to British Excellence. I think Annie Lennox maybe shared a thing about it. But that makes perfect sense. They need to do that.
They totally need to do that. And I feel that they will. I mean, I don't know how much longer the honours can go on for, to be honest, with all the kind of scandals over people buying them.
Buying them, yeah. It's important that we all know that Natasha didn't buy hers.
No.
Okay, just so everyone knows.
I don't have that sort of cash.
You got it for services to young people.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we sometimes sort of do this podcast chronologically, but let's dive in there. How long have you been working with young people and how long have you been sort of in the sort of mental health space?
So I started going into schools in 2008, which terrifyingly means that some of the young people I work with now weren't even born then.
Yeah, that is terrifying.
Yeah, totally terrifying. But it was because I was just sort of newly in recovery from an eating disorder at the time.
Okay.
And sort of hadn't worked for about a year. It just had been too sick to work and was sort of finding my feet and trying to work out what I wanted to do with my life. And I'd always had this idea in the back of my head that I wanted to have a conversation in schools about mental health that was a bit more universally relevant than what I'd had and didn't focus so much on the extremes. And so I thought, what I'll do is I'll go and I'll speak to some young people and I'll put together a really good lesson plan and then I'll give it to teachers and then I'll work out what I want to do with my life. And then 14 years later, I'm still doing it.
What age were you when you first started doing that?
I would have been 27.
Right. And did you feel that there was a real gap in your education around? Is that what sort of fueled it?
Yeah, I'm really lucky, I think, because I speak to other people my age who weren't told anything about mental health at all. Like Johnny Benjamin, I don't know if you're aware of him.
That name rings a bell, yeah.
He's another mental health campaigner. He's about the same age as me. And he told me that he said literally the only thing that he knew about mental health at the time of leaving school was he'd watch One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And that was it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 36 and I feel like part of my education was kind of toughen up, like the world's tough.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like there was anyone that was like, are you all right?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's there's a lot of kind of having to modify your own behavior. I think particularly when you're a girl, you're always told to sort of shape yourself to how the world is. So I guess when you compare it to that, I was quite lucky. But we had, you know, those assemblies that were very trendy in the 90s where people would come in and share their story. And it was always a really charismatic person with a really interesting story. But it wasn't relatable. You know, it was, I was homeless because of my addiction issues, or I was sectioned, or I nearly died. And so therefore, when it was happening to me, I didn't recognize it because I thought it only happened to people who were like the people I'd seen in those assemblies, if you see what I mean.
Right. Yes, I do know what you mean. And so what were you like at school?
Just incredibly swotty. And now I know that I had undiagnosed anxiety for a really long time.
Right.
And one of the ways that I cope with it is through overworking, which makes me really susceptible to burnout. So I have to kind of put in structures to ward against that. But back in the 90s when I was at school, everyone just thought I was an overachiever, and it was great because I was, you know, reading texts around the books that we were studying and doing extra essays and just so would try and stay at school for as long as possible. I was in every club, every society, you know, just interested endlessly in everything. And my mum says she remembers going to parents' evenings and my teachers being like, how are you doing this? Like, how have you raised this child? Because my teachers thought it was wonderful that I was so interested in everything that they had to say. I wasn't particularly popular, as you can imagine, but I did enjoy school.
That's great. That's brilliant. And I suppose you said you had undiagnosed anxiety, but were you aware that you were sort of maybe, I'm sort of loath to use the word worrying because I think that sometimes like really undermines what having real anxiety is.
Yeah.
Were you aware that you were putting that pressure on yourself, or was it just like, I'm going to do this because
there was one moment where I sort of questioned how normal I was, and it was my parents went away and my grandparents came to look after me and my brothers for a week. And I remember my granddad saying to me, I've seen you deteriorate in terms of you started Monday, you had loads of energy and you're really enthusiastic. And he said, now I'm looking at you and it feels like you can barely stand, kind of thing. You know, he said, you work so hard, but I've watched it throughout the course of this week take its toll on you. And that was the only time I think anyone noticed what I was doing. I'm a very in my head person. One of my colleagues at LBC sent me a voice note the other day asking me what I thought about a news story. And I sent a voice note back and it was about 5 minutes long. And my colleague was like, that's a lot of thoughts. And I said, yeah, that's what it's like in my brain. I'm just always thinking about stuff all the time. You know, you only ever inhabit your head, don't you? And so you don't know what it's like for other people. You don't realize that other people aren't carrying that burden.
No, absolutely. And you know, as someone that has certainly bouts of anxiety and lives with sort of an underlying level of it, I can't really imagine what it's like to not feel anxious some of the time, or to not, like my wife will say to me when everything's sort of going well, she'll say to me, don't start searching for it. Don't start searching for that thing to worry about. And it's exactly what I do. I really sort of begin to look. I'm like, there must be something.
Yeah.
There must be something. And yeah, as you say, there's no way of knowing what it's like outside of that brain.
I had a conversation with my brother once. So my uncle, when I got married, my uncle told me that he was going to be on holiday the week that I got married. So I was like, oh, don't worry about it. And then I didn't send him an invitation because I thought he was away. And then it turned out, it transpired after I got married, I found this out, it transpired that he'd moved his holiday so that he could come to the wedding, but had never got an invite. And so I spoke to him about it at like a family gathering. And I said, I didn't know. And he said, it's fine. Please don't worry. It's fine. And then afterwards, I spoke to my brother and I said, I feel so bad about this. And my brother said, well, Uncle Andrew said, don't worry about it. So if I were you, I would just not worry about it. And I remember thinking, wow, is that how other people operate? They just go, well, I've been told not to worry, so I just shan't.
Yeah, I think it's how some people operate, but not you or I.
No, definitely not.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin Underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And obviously, you know, this is a podcast about coming out and being out and working out who you are in the world. Did you have any inkling at that time that maybe none of your anxiety was linked to your identity, but were you aware at all at that time that you were different to the majority of people in your year?
Yeah, I remember actually watching an Eddie Izzard DVD when I was in my teens, where she talks about being a lid thinker, where you're not in the box, but you're not totally out the box either.
Right.
And I remember that resonating with me so much because I feel like a lid person. There are so many things that make me a tiny bit different, but I can still be part of the club if I want to. So, you know, I'm of mixed ethnic heritage, but most people think I'm white when they meet me. I come from a working class background, but I'm now a writer and speaker, which is a very middle class job. Mm-hmm. You know, I have an ongoing mental illness, which technically means I'm disabled, but I can choose to hide it if I want to. And I'm bisexual, but I'm married to a man. So for all of these reasons, I feel like this kind of lid person where, and I've always felt a little bit sort of like I'm on the periphery looking in. And then it was only when somebody said to me, oh, you're thinking about it in the wrong way. You're a bridge between worlds because being you gives you access to all of these different perspectives and communities.
That's a great way of looking at it.
It was such a good way of looking at it. Yeah, and completely changed. I thought, oh, maybe I don't have to find my tribe. Maybe my job is to help the tribes come together, if you see what I mean.
And maybe you're in both tribes and that's fine as well.
Yeah, yeah. I've been thinking about this a lot because I remember the first time I realized I was attracted to women, I was about 9. I was definitely still in primary school. And there was this copy of Smash Hits, which loads of gay and bisexual women my age remember. It had Dannii Minogue on the front.
Sure.
And she was wearing dungarees.
Sure. I'm in.
And I just remember looking at it for ages because she just looked so incredible and feeling something that was different. Because I remember around the same time I had a copy of a Michael Jackson album cover on my wall. And I just used to sit and look at his eyebrows for hours and hours and hours thinking he has the most amazing eyebrows. And I remember distinctly feeling, no, this is different from Michael Jackson's eyebrows. This feeling that you're feeling, this isn't just, oh, it's pretty to look at. This is something else. And then I said to a family member, oh, I think the words I used was, I think I might be a bit funny because I'm really obsessed with this picture of Dannii Minogue. And then my family member just going, don't be so silly. And, you know, that was the end of the conversation. And I've since spoken about that online and had people say to me, you know, if it had been Kylie, you would be a full gay now.
Well, if it had been Kylie, you'd be a gay guy now.
Yeah,
so it would have been an even bigger journey. It's funny, isn't it, how those, like, I wonder what being told that was silly did to 9-year-old you.
I think the whole idea of bisexuality being silly is something that's followed me my whole life.
Yeah.
I think with bisexual men, people assume that they're gay and in denial. And with bisexual women, people assume that we are straight but attention seeking.
Yeah.
And that's something I internalized as well, I think.
Sure. And I think something that I have been guilty of myself is saying, oh, well, of course I was bisexual for a bit. And it being a stepping stone to coming out as a lesbian, which I now know as a grown-up lesbian, it totally invalidates people's experiences. And I would certainly not want to do that. But it was definitely something that I said in a way to try on how people would relate to me and whether it meant that I would lose all my friends.
Yeah.
And it was something that you know, something I'm not proud of, but something that I did in a desperate situation where I didn't know what else to do. And I think that's a really important thing. It's certainly something that we've received quite a lot of. I wanted to talk to you about a lot of things, but it's definitely, this was part of what I wanted to talk to you about, because I think that making sure that the B is visible in LGBT plus is really, really important. That, you know, as a lesbian, I don't accidentally brush over that, because I think that that happens quite a lot in our community. And I think you're absolutely right. Those two ways of viewing bisexual men and bisexual women can be really harmful for everyone, and actually harmful for the whole community.
Yeah.
But people have got in touch. It's actually probably the email that I receive the most would be from a woman who is mid to late 30s saying, I've always known I'm bisexual. I'm married. I don't want to leave my husband, but I really love your podcast and I've never done anything about my bisexuality.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's so great to be able to share your story, because I think that's something that's actually not discussed very much, because it feels like once you get married, it's like, well, that's who you've got.
Yeah.
So you're this thing now.
I know.
Or once you've, you know, not necessarily married, but like settled down, or you're with someone if you've got a long-term partner.
Something that I've started doing is, I was talking to young LGBTQ people and they were saying, mm-hmm. we only ever get discussed in the context of sex education. And there's already an issue with the community being hypersexualized. And what we would really love is for representation, but more in a kind of, oh, and by the way, they're also, you know, gay or trans or whatever, but they're a scientist or yes. a politician or whatever yes. it is. So something that I have started doing recently in my talks is just dropping it in that I'm bisexual, but that's not why I'm here. That's not what I'm here to talk to you about. I'm here to talk to you about mental health. But by the way, here I am existing. Should you need to see that kind of thing?
Yes, and, absolutely. Oh my God, that must be so liberating for so many young people. If you had come to my school and said that, I would have been like, oh my God, she exists. Fucking brilliant. Thank God. There's someone that's a bit like me.
Yeah, I do think that it is appreciated. I've had some good feedback on that. But I did it at a teaching conference once, and where we were staying overnight. And the next day I came down to breakfast and one of these teachers came up to me and went, well, after you went to bed last night, you were quite the topic of conversation. And I went, okay, why? And she said, because you mentioned in your talk that you're bisexual, but we also noticed that you're wearing a wedding ring. She just looked at me like, and I was like, yeah, there's no inherent contradiction. And then I went to tell her more. And then I thought, no, actually.
I don't owe you this.
Exactly. It's like, if I'd have married a woman, I wouldn't have become gay that day. Mm-hmm. The fact that I married a man doesn't mean I became straight that day. It's about more than the relationship you are in or your sex life. Like, it's so much bigger than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking to young people, do you see a real sort of disparity between sort of what young people are saying to you or what they're hearing from an adult like you talking to them about sort of their existence and validating their existence and what they might be getting from other adults in their life? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. Okay. It makes total sense. My agenda is very much set by young people, mm-hmm. I've realized. Having one foot in education and one foot in media is a really interesting experience. So my experience in schools, of course, homophobia still exists in schools and a lot of stereotypes around what certain groups of people are like exist. But the big thing was gender questioning, non-binary and transgender young people. And certainly I always felt this massive responsibility to be an ally in that regard. And I still feel like this is an area where young people have such a clear understanding of it. And then their parents are so scared of it. It's one of those situations where you're thinking, well, actually, your elders should know more about this stuff, but they really don't in this instance. And I think that, I mean, I've said this before, that understanding gender and its role in society in the way that trans and non-binary people do is really liberating for everyone. Like, it's been liberating for me as a giant, great big lady. It's, you know, understanding that I don't have to be small and feminine in order to qualify as a woman has been, you know, really, really liberating for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And owning language. I mean, people that listen to this podcast will remember that at the beginning of this podcast, in the first two series, I used to always say, I prefer to refer to myself as a gay woman rather than a lesbian. And I'm in my late 30s now, and it's only now that I feel sort of almost confident enough to be like, oh no, I can use the word lesbian. And there's actually some ownership there. And I think, you know, owning those words, whatever the words are that are about your identity, it's good for everyone to, if you feel comfortable saying that, if you feel comfortable being yourself unapologetically, people around you will go, oh, well, they seem happy.
That is the thing.
Now I feel quite confident using the terms that they've given me to use for them because they seem so comfortable with it. You know, I think that's part of the fear sometimes that people worry about pussyfooting around what words to use.
Yeah.
Whereas if someone's got like a great ownership of it, like you're calling yourself a big lady, you know, I feel like that as well though, because I'm definitely a cis woman, but you know, I like wearing suits. I like, you know, being quite androgynous in how I dress, and I'm not petite, but yeah, you're so right. It is good for everyone.
Interesting story that I thought that you would appreciate is I went back into my old school.
And where was that?
Bishop Stortford.
Okay, sure.
In Hertfordshire, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a town I always describe as it's a bit up itself. It's got ideas above its station, you know.
And for people that live outside of the UK, what does it look like?
It's one of these, it's a market town. So it's got this teeny tiny little centre and an infrastructure that doesn't really support how massive it is, because it's very close to Stansted Airport. So it's become a sort of satellite town for all the people who work at Stansted Airport. It is technically in Hertfordshire, but its energy is Essex. So it's, you know, people make a lot of effort with their appearance. People are very aware that they're being watched. There's a lot of, you know, if you've got money, you wear it or you drive it type.
Yeah. They wouldn't be shy about a personalised number plate.
Absolutely not. It's rammed personalised number plates. But also,
and my dad has a personalised number plate. There's no judgment happening there. If you see Ruff in Portsmouth, that's him.
I love that. But then it also thinks it's better than Essex as well. Like it's got those kind of dual things going on. So I went to an all girls school in Bishop Stortford, and I went back there about 10 years ago now. And there was a girl that was in sixth form at the time called Ellen Jones, who is now like a prolific LGBTQ campaigner. She has been out since she was about 11, like some kind of ridiculously amazing young age, got horrifically bullied, but just really kind of pioneering. And she knows everybody in the community. She's like the queen mum of gays, like despite being really young. So my talk apparently had a really profound impact on her. And then we stayed in touch. Then she moved to London. And then in 2017, when I wrote my book, A Beginner's Guide to Being Mental, I talk about sexuality in it. And still, I think I had like quite a lot of internalized biphobia at the time. And I have this big thing about not wanting to be seen to center myself when I'm aware that there is so much kind of oppression that is still faced by other people in the community. So I sort of wrote in this book, you know, like, oh, I have had relationships with women, but not as many as the relationships I've had with men. So I don't know if that makes me bisexual. You know, I just don't put a label on it. And then Ellen came to me and went, you know, like that Mae Martin bit of stand-up where they're like, I had this auntie that went, you're gay, right? Huh. Ellen kind of went to me, you're gay, right? You need to kind of own this and step up. So it was almost like the role reversal of I'd helped her back when she was at school, and now she was helping me with my coming out thing. And then I spoke to her recently. She said, it's so funny that now, she said, I don't think anyone would read you as straight now, because she said, you're so much more comfortable. You're not trying to be smaller. You're not trying to be feminine. You're just being you. And that's definitely linked to being more comfortable with owning that label of bisexual as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's just something about when you know, it doesn't need to be like necessarily to everyone. It can just be to a few people in your life or even just to yourself. But as soon as you sort of go, oh, yeah, that is who I am, your shoulders just come down by 2 inches, don't they? It's just like, oh, it's like just a release, like some air that's been trapped in your lungs for like 15 years goes, oh, okay, fine, that's who I am. I want to talk a little bit about your new book, Toxic. How much of that is influenced by your time at school?
It is set in 2019. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the stuff that the main character goes through is very different in terms of, you know, social media is a big part of the story, for example. But in terms of the foundational things about who she is, you know, being of mixed heritage but not knowing your dad, being raised by a single white mum in a town that's a bit up itself, very much we have a lot in common. So there's a lot of me in Luella. Somebody asked me if there was any queer representation in the book recently, and Luella's incredibly woke, as I think I would be if I was a teenager now, and as most of the teenage girls that I meet are. So she talks a lot about, you know, there's a trans boy at her school and things like that. But she is bisexual, she just hasn't worked it out yet. And some people who have read it have gone, she so is. Because you just know, don't you?
Right. Yes. If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Yeah.
If you know, you can read it. You can read it in people. Absolutely. I was having a conversation with my wife the other day where she said to me, you've kind of got a gay face. And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, queer people will know you're gay. You've just kind of got a gay face. And I was like, oh, I mean, I don't dislike that. But okay, I got a gay face. Sure, that's okay. If you know, you know. You got a gay face. I was like, okay. When did you come out?
So officially, in terms of describing myself as bisexual, 2018. Very recently.
Right. So it's quite, and that obviously comes quite a long time after your experiences with eating disorders. And if you don't want to answer this, that's totally fine. And we'll just cut this bit. But I was just interested to, because I've spoken to people before, and this actually isn't in a public forum, but to friends who have suffered with eating disorders. Their identities were actually something that was really part of it because it was about control. Mm. Was there a link to your identity with your eating disorder? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And is that something you're happy to talk about?
Yes. So now I recognize my eating disorder was, in mental health circles, we talk about primaries and secondaries.
Right, okay.
So everybody's got their kind of root issue. So the example would be, if you have depression and you drink a lot, it could be that because alcohol is a depressant, the alcohol is causing the depression, or it could be that you're drinking to self-medicate for the depression.
Right.
But you have to work out what your primary is to know what to tackle first.
Sure. And so if that was the scenario, if you were using booze as sort of a form of medication, for want of a better word, the booze would be your secondary.
Right.
And there'd be another route to you. Is that right? I just want to make sure I'm getting this right. Yeah. Okay. Wicked.
So anxiety is my primary, definitely.
Yes.
And I think my eating disorder was a coping strategy in many ways for the anxiety that I felt. But it was also because I kept being told in my sort of late teens, early 20s, your body's letting your face down. And it's that kind of being, it's that being between worlds thing again.
That's horrible. I mean, do you mean from like actual people or like the media?
No, I mean from actual people. And this is where, you know, this coincides with a period of my life where I had some interest from modelling agencies, but also when straight men became a feature in my life. Because bearing in mind, I've been to an all-girls school, so the only straight men I knew were my brothers.
Right, you know, yeah,
at
sure.
At that point. And it was, oh, you know, you're almost there. So I wasn't completely gender non-conforming, even though I'm big, you know, and I take up space. It was like, oh, if you were just a bit smaller, you'd be perfect, kind of thing. It was always the implication was you need to work harder and then your life will get better. And I believe that. I thought all this distress that I'm feeling, if I just look right, then it will disappear. And so many people believe that still, I think.
Yeah. That's really, I mean, totally unsurprising of the time that we were living through then. I imagine that messages from the media were saying something quite similar to women of sort of around our age. It was so, I mean, you just think about like Heat magazine and like the circle of shame and all that stuff that like, I mean, we must be sort of a similar age that we grew up around being like, oh my God, someone's like leaning over and it would like circle like their skin folding over.
I know.
Like, the shame. But it was just so normal. It was so normal for girls in my school. I've never had an eating disorder, but I know that there was times when I had slightly disordered eating where I wanted to be little.
Yeah.
I wanted to be small. I was told once that I had really big shoulders, which I don't. But I was told that. And it was a thing for, like, I would say 6 years of my life. It made me think, I thought about it every time I got dressed. Like, don't show your shoulders off because they're, like, muscly. And that's not what people want to see.
And I say this to the young women that I work with now. I'm like, you have to believe me. When I went to school, big lips were not a thing, hadn't been invented yet.
White
women couldn't get them, therefore they weren't a beauty paradigm. You know, being strong, being muscular, which is very much my natural body type, was not considered attractive.
Or like having a booty.
Having a bum.
Like, yeah. It was all about Kylie in those gold hot pants.
It was.
There was only one way to be.
And glamour models were very much kind of dominating.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so I said, you know, what this experience of being me has taught me is if you're just yourself, eventually you will come into fashion because fashions change.
Yeah.
Don't concern yourself with that. Just do you. Because you can't win as a woman either. Like, you know, however you look, society will find a way to judge you. So don't try and win that game. Just do you.
Or they'll say, she's trying too hard.
Yeah, exactly.
It's embarrassing how hard she's trying. And it's like, everyone's trying. It just depends who they've decided to hate today. You know, with so much of your work going into schools and speaking to young people, how's the pendulum going for, like, people being liberated and feeling excited? I spoke to Owen Jones, the podcast, and we were talking about the fact that we feel like there was like this brief period where it felt a lot better for queer people, where we were like, we can get married, we can have kids. And now the media's and people and TERFs are sort of, you know, if they're starting with trans people, they don't think it would just be trans people they go after. It would be the whole community.
Totally.
And like, how's that with young people, do you feel like? Do they feel liberated or does it feel quite frightening still?
So I think it must be a terrifying time to be a young queer person, because what I think transphobia has done is it's provided a little kind of chink in the armor through which all of the hatred, because where there's transphobia, there is homophobia and misogyny normally as well.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's enabled. And I've realized this, that I was in such a lefty silo. I mean, I worked in education and I was writing for The Guardian, you know, and then I got the job on LBC, which I'm endlessly grateful for and I love it. But it definitely gave me a peek beyond.
I mean, you must have to deal with some absolute nightmares. Like, some people must ring in and you must want to say fuck off.
Yes. Yes.
Like, obviously you don't, you're very good at your job, you're very professional, but sometimes you must want to say, oh, get fucked.
Yeah. It would be great if maybe for comic relief or something, 1 year, there's a day where we're allowed to say, just fuck off.
Yeah.
But actually, so when I first started doing kind of queer events, I was talking to other people who were on panels and stuff. I remember talking to Juno Dawson and her saying to me, you know, there's still a lot of biphobia. And me looking at her going, come on, you're a trans woman and you're a high profile trans woman. Don't worry about me, you know, I'll be fine. And then on LBC, I did, it was 50 years of Pride. Mm-hmm. And I decided to do an hour of how far have we come? How far have we still got to go? If you are an LGBTQ person, how are you feeling? And then for literally about 5 minutes at the beginning of the hour, I spoke about my own experience, because that very often inspires callers, you know,
absolutely.
If you share.
Yeah. If you share, sure.
Literally, I've never known anything like it, of people screaming at me on social media, you know, stop forcing it down our throats. We don't care. People were messaging me to tell me how much they didn't care about my sexuality. And I was like, well, it really seems like you care, because you've taken time out of your day. I was called a narcissist. Yeah. I was called an attention seeker. And I suddenly got what Juno Dawson had been talking about. I was like, oh, okay. This is what you meant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's definitely got worse. I think because, like with all of the isms, you know, racism, misogyny has been enabled by recent political shifts.
Absolutely.
And therefore, as much as within the, if you're just talking to young people, they tend to be quite progressive and liberal. Yeah. They've only got to look at the world. And I think it would be really scary.
Yeah, it must be. It really must be. I mean, you work in media. You're a bright woman. You've written books. What do we do? I'm coming to you for the answers. Yeah. You don't have to have one.
I'm like, I have written a book, but this might be beyond my capabilities. So people always talk about, you know, it used to be political correctness and then it's now become woke and it's used as this pejorative thing and people talk about it as though it's an impingement on people's freedom of speech. But from my point of view, I feel like we have to have a thing where we say, this is what as a society we find acceptable. And no, you can't say that in polite company. And yes, you will be picked up on it. And
yeah.
It doesn't, you know, not all opinions are equal. If you are ignorant, then your opinion is not worth the same as somebody who is not. And I think we've sort of lost that people were so concerned with what they weren't allowed to say that it's enabled all this really, really hateful rhetoric to become mainstream. So I think we kind of need to reclaim the woke agenda.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that so often people will say, oh, you know, I'm allowed to say that. And it's like, yeah, I mean, physically you can say whatever you know, you can say words, but don't think that there's not a consequence.
That's the thing.
Even now, if I think of the things that people would shout at me when I was on stage, when I was a new stand-up, when I came out, like I think if it happened now, it would get such a different response. I think that the audience, but then there'd probably be audiences at my shows. So, you know, they're going to be. But you know, I even had some homophobic heckling in my last tour.
Wow. And
you're like, this is my own show. This is insane. Why the fuck have you come?
Yeah, who did they think they were going to see?
Who the fuck knows?
It's like I saw a review of Miriam Margolyes' autobiography on Amazon, and it said that there was too much about her being a lesbian and Jewish. And I was like, whose book did you think you were buying? don't buy a book by a lesbian Jew if that's not what you want to read about.
It doesn't surprise me, but it makes me furious that you spoke briefly on your own show about your experience. And I feel like, you know, if a straight man had said, well, this is how I feel about being a dad, even people that weren't dads would be like, yeah, I guess he needs to speak about being a dad. You know, people would find a way to accept it.
Not even that. They would be applauding him, being like, how do you find the time to be an amazing parent and have an LBC show?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, you're totally right. Yeah, it makes me livid, actually. It makes me really livid. So you came out in 2018. Were you already married by this point?
Yeah.
You were. And so it was something that you were sort of working out about yourself in your marriage.
Yeah, and I'd been honest with my husband. Like he knew that I was also attracted to women and loves that we can have discussions about hot women. and that I understand the difference between a woman that straight women think should be hot and women who are actually hot. He loves that. So we have those conversations. But I do remember there was, because he struggles with depression, which is something that he's spoken openly about, particularly in relation to the seasons. He has seasonal affective disorder.
Right, sure, yeah.
And he went for some counselling and the counsellor said to him, do you think that we should talk about your wife being bisexual? And that was the first time. I'd never described myself that way. That was the first time anyone had ever applied that label to me. I think he just mentioned that I'd had relationships with women before I married him. And I said, what did you say? And he was like, well, it's not a reason for my mental health issues. It doesn't bother me. So I said, no, we don't need to talk about that. But I thought, isn't that interesting that people thought he would need to be counselled?
Yeah. Seasonally.
Yes.
It's something that comes up seasonally. Like,
I only fancy women in the winter, Susie.
Yeah. but that's such a... That feels like really route one of the therapist, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's a jealousy thing. It's a, yeah. Wow. And so how long was it after he said that to you that you thought, actually, this word might belong to me?
I was really pleased with how casual he was about it. He was like, And you know what? That was mostly the response I got from people. They were like, yeah, I can see that about you. Or, yeah, we knew, sort of thing.
Right, yeah.
I remember... So my parents, my mum's remarried now to a wonderful, wonderful man. And they're both very liberal, left-leaning, just brilliant people. And my coming out to them consisted of, we were having a conversation over a glass of wine, and we were talking about the first person that we ever really loved, ever sort of fell in love with. And I was talking about a girl that I met at uni. And my stepdad said, no, not love like a friend, love we're talking about. And I went, yeah. And he just went, oh, right, okay. That was it. It's really anticlimactic.
But that's lovely.
Yeah.
Like, I hope that feels like something that that society should strive for.
Yeah.
For everyone to be like your stepdad.
And yes.
Go, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, all right.
Cool. Yeah, that adds up.
But not the thing that I was trying to get across that made people really angry that time I spoke on LBC was, mm-hmm, there's a difference between going, oh, okay, and saying, I don't care. I think like a lot of progressive people feel like it's a good response when someone comes out to you to say, I don't care about that. You're still the same to me. But what you're doing is you're like dismissing everything that person has been through to get to a point where they can tell you about who they are.
Yeah.
And so it comes across as, it's like when people say, I don't see color, and you're like, well, of course you do, you dick.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and don't dismiss that
person.
No, totally. And
that was something when I was 18, that was the thing to say.
Yeah, yeah.
We all said it. We were like, yeah, we didn't have the word woke, but we were like, yeah, I'm really like cultured.
Yeah.
And understanding. But yeah, I think that it's someone saying, I don't care is then you going, oh, but it's big for me, so you should care.
Yeah, it's a big thing for me. So I think it's far better to say, oh, right, like my stepdad did. Okay.
Yeah, good for you.
Or thank you for telling me, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you what I hate. It's a real pet hate of mine when people say they tell someone and they say, yeah, I always knew that. And you're like, no, don't take this away.
Yeah.
You know, there might have been like a train ride or a sleepless night where they thought about how this would go. And you saying, oh, I always knew, totally dismisses the fact that it was hard for them to do it.
I totally was guilty of that. So one of the producers at LBC, the first time we went out socially, she sat down with me and she said, can I tell you something? And I was like, sure. And she said, I'm bisexual. And I knew. So I kind of went, yeah, like that. And she went, that's it. And I went, and I sort of had to check myself and say, you know, say that thing of going, thank you for telling me. It's great that you felt that you could tell me about that. But my first default response was to say, well, yeah, I knew that. Obviously you are. You can just tell. It's the vibe you're giving off. Like, you know, but it is so diminishing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But that's okay. I think like it's okay. Like I've definitely got it wrong. I'm sure that I would have said to a very camp male friend of mine at some point or another, yeah, of course you're gay. I knew that you were gay. But I've probably got a mate listening to this right now going, well, you fucking did that to me. So, you know, I know that I'd be guilty of it as well. Now, I'm so pleased that you had the time to come on the show, because I feel like there are thousands of women that listen to this show that are going to resonate so much with your story and so much with you sort of coming to a place of ownership of the different labels that you now use for yourself. The final question that I ask everyone that comes on the show is sort of an advice to your younger self. But I'm thinking of your younger self being about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
sort of the version of Natasha that was still not using that word about herself. And maybe there's someone that's listening that feels very similarly now. And, you know, this podcast is never about telling people to come out. I think that, you know, sometimes it's not safe and sometimes it's not the right thing to do. But even just coming out to yourself, if you could reach out to someone that's having similar feelings to you in 2018, what would you say?
I think I would say that if you feel safe to do so, and if it's important to you to embrace a label, and it's not for everyone, but for me it really was, that will be a conduit to embracing so many other things about yourself. It's like once you are no longer trying to hide this part of yourself or trying to diminish this part of yourself, it somehow makes it okay to be authentic in other areas of your life too. And it's the most incredibly freeing experience. And working in education, I was really scared because bisexual people in particular are hypersexualized. I thought people would think that I wasn't okay to be around kids. Ugh. That was my biggest fear. And I'm sure there are some people who do think that. But for every one of them, I know that there's been 10 teenagers who have seen me and heard me speak and think that it's okay to be themselves now. And that's worth far, far more. So I couldn't be happier that I made that decision.
Oh, Natasha, honestly, if you had come to my school and been authentically yourself, my mental health in my late teens and early 20s would have been so much improved. Just that, thank God you're doing that work. I don't even really believe in God, but that's a different podcast. But thank goodness that you're doing that work and that you're being an authentic version of yourself, because I bet there are hundreds upon thousands of kids that, even if they're not part of our community, but just feel a bit more comfortable being exactly who they are because they listen to you speak. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
That was the brilliant Natasha Devon. I hope that you loved it. I did. Look up Natasha on the socials. She's doing really important work for the community and for rights of lots of people. She's great to listen to. She's so interesting. She's so engaging. She's so informative. Follow her. Be across what she does. Okay. The email again, hello@outwithsusieruffle.com. Get in touch with me. But I will see you. Well, I won't see you, will I? But I'll speak to you next week. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.